head of Dignity SA and champion of the right to die, Professor Sean Davison, is finally free after serving a three-year house arrest imposed on him for helping three people who suffered tremendously to die with dignity. Davison was punished for assisting the men whose days were marked by anguish and with no hope of recovery, fulfill their wish to die. In his plea bargain, he stated that he acted at their request. A close family member to each of them, the men, testified in his defense, and we welcome him on the line. Professor Sean, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us. How does it feel to finally be free after 3 years, the incarceration or the restriction, we would say?
It's a wonderful feeling. For a start, I was very lucky not to be in jail, so house arrest felt like a luxury compared to jail. But it was a punishment, and it was meant to be a punishment, and there's a great loss of freedom and regular police checks on the house. But now that's all over, and it's wonderful to feel free and to speak freely. I had a three-year ban on talking to the media.
Yes. You did the time, but do you believe you committed a crime? Do you regret your actions assisting those men to die with dignity?
No, I do not regret my actions. If I did not help those men, I would have regretted it for the rest of my life. These men were suffering unbearably. They had no hope of recovery. And most importantly, they wanted to die, but could not do it on their own. That is the only reason I became involved. I was charged with murder, but it wasn't murder. I helped them to end their own lives. This is not murder, and that is what I was convicted of.
Why did you enter into a plea bargain?
My children want a father at home, not a hero sitting in prison. If I didn't enter into that plea bargain, I would have gone to court with a very high risk of going to jail. The minimum sentence for premeditated murder is life in prison. And I had been charged with three premeditated murders. And all the legal opinion in the country indicated there was no way I could avoid jail. So if I continued in court, I would have been a hero for the cause. But my children would have lost a father for a very long time.
You have written a new book about your extraordinary journey, you know, The Price of Mercy, A Fight for Right to Die with Dignity. What have you outlined in the book?
Well, my book tells the story behind the story of my arrest. It lets the reader put themselves in the position of the people I helped to die. And really, before anyone judges me, they should put themselves not only in the position of the people who are suffering and how they would feel if they were quadriplegic and unable to move, but put themselves in my position and ask themselves, would they be able to walk away, turn their back on human suffering?
Yes. Tell us about, you know, your journey towards the euthanasia itself. You know, how were you exposed to it and how did it all come about?
Well, it was by chance, really. I should say at the beginning that it is not an issue that people generally think about. We're busy living life and enjoying life, which is what we should be doing. Only when we're confronted with the suffering of death in our own life do we start to think about it. And this happened to me when my mother died in New Zealand. I was with her. She was a medical doctor, 85 years old, terminally ill with cancer, and she had a good life, and I was with her to celebrate her death which was coming up. She decided to go on a hunger strike to end her death. As a doctor, she knew the horrible death from the cancer. She said, I'm going to stop eating and die. And it didn't happen that way. She lingered and lingered and lingered, not eating, virtually decomposing in her bed, until she eventually begged me to help her to die. She wouldn't have asked otherwise, but she couldn't even move her arms or her legs. She needed help. And I helped her to die by giving her the overdose of morphine. This brought me into a world of suffering that I had no awareness of. After I became known in the media, I was inundated with stories of people who'd been in the same position and had also helped their loved one to die, and they wanted to know they're not alone. And I was inundated by requests of people begging for help on how to die. They were near the end, they were suffering, and they wanted to choose their own time and to die with dignity. Suddenly, I was thrown into a world that I had no knowledge of, no awareness of. I was right in the middle of it, not by choice, by fate.
How does this differ from suicide?
Well, quite a bit different. Suicide, the person is taking their own life on their own. And sadly, this happens every day for various reasons. Some people are unable to end their own life. For example, the three men I helped to die. And they need help, and that's called assisted suicide. Keep in mind now, someone like Dr. Berger, who I helped to die, the law discriminates against them. You are allowed to commit suicide under the law, but you're not allowed to have help. So quadriplegic is discriminated by the law, and that is where the law needs to be looked at.
From your perspective, you know, should euthanasia be open to any person who wants to follow this path, or people who are terminally ill, people who are suffering?
No, there would be very strict criteria applied. At the very beginning, the person must be mentally competent to make a decision like this, and then they must be suffering unbearably with no hope of recovery. So they don't only have to be terminally ill. It could be in a situation like Dr. Anna Berger, the quadriplegic. Her suffering was so great, he didn't want to continue life, but not terminally ill.
So if a person is just, you know, a teenager who's fed up with life and wants to take his or her life, you know, in a situation like that, would you be open to helping the person if the law had allowed for you?
That would not be classified as unbearable suffering. I should point out that the teenager could end the life anyway, and does happen tragically, very tragically. And can I also point out that should they apply for an assisted death, that would be their first exposure to psychological help, which could actually help them, to stop them from committing suicide. On their own, they might just go off and do it. And I can also add, by changing the law, it actually saves lives. Many people would commit suicide, but if they know they have the option of an assisted death, they will hold on and maybe have a natural death. Now, if I quickly apply that to Dr. Anna Berger, the quadriplegic, if he knew the law was different and he could have the option of an assisted death any time he wanted it, he would be alive today. He was so frightened he'd never get the opportunity, because everybody he asked, every doctor he asked, every friend he asked, turned their back on him.
In responding to the question, you've made reference to the law itself, you know, and the framework of the law, but your own personal beliefs and your own personal thoughts on it, that if a teenager wanted to take their life, and would you be open to do that if the law allowed it?
No, the way you phrase that, definitely not. You're thinking of like a Romeo and Juliet situation, an impulsive emotional decision. No, there'd be very strict criteria, and there'd be a time period, a time window, quite a significant one, where the request must be made repeatedly. The person involved must make have a mental assessment, a psychiatric assessment. And in the situation you described, I can't imagine it being at all possible to have an assisted death, no.
Your journey has been a difficult one for yourself, and as you said, that you had to choose what was in the interest of your family. And sharing your story with us this morning has been fascinating, Professor Sin. We were really fascinated by your story, and thank you for availing yourself to talk to us.
My pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
You have a lovely day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go well. Bye-bye. So that was Professor Sin Davison talking about euthanasia, and he assisted three people taking their lives, or putting themselves to death, and these were under circumstances of suffering. So Islamically, we know the perspective on euthanasia, that this is not Islamically allowed for any person to take their own life or to assist in any way death, life and death is solely the prerogative of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and therefore we should always understand that. The reason why we spoke to Professor Seen was just to get insight on his story and to understand the perspective of the law of the country and where things are. So that is the rationale behind interviewing Professor Seen Davison this morning, bringing us on to 529.